You know, it's my great pleasure right now to introduce to everybody a man who really needs no introduction.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King.
Carl. I'm not calling the fans geeks. I'm not calling them rednecks, tobacco chewing nothing, because I've done all that myself.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King. Carl.
In your dreams, you will see me.
Excuse me, please, let's don't talk negatively.
I'm going to win the title. I'm going to keep my money and buy me some good old Tennessee drinking whiskey with it.
Thank you for being such a great husband.
And this is for you, Fannie Mae. Solid gold, baby, just like you and me.
Hey, everybody. Carl here for the Dragon King Carl Classic Wrestling Audio Show. WrestlingObserver.com, Figure4Online.com, my website, WhenItWasCool.com. Thank you very much for joining me here today. I apologize, my voice is just about gone. We do a lot of audio over at WhenItWasCool.com. If you haven't checked us out, we do a show every single day. Some days we even do two shows. We have Patreon packages starting at $1 for an entire month's access. Hope you'll come over and check us out, because we do not only pro wrestling history, and obviously there's tons of that over there. We have almost 2,000 shows in our archives, but we do retro pop culture as well. That could be old TV shows, movies, sports, music, you name it. We cover it over there, and we have a real good time. Hope you'll check us out at whenitwascool.com and hit one of those Patreon buttons. So I'm back to my rotation of classic wrestling shows here on the Classic Wrestling Audio Show, and I've added one to the mix, and we're going to periodically, no pun intended, take a look at the old school newsstand magazines. Now, these were, Dave Meltzer often talks down about these magazines and stuff. He really, in my opinion, seriously underestimates the impact these magazines had. Okay, in the days and years before I even knew what a newsletter was, knew what a sheet was, everybody that was a wrestling fan knew, got their wrestling information from these newsstand magazines. Now, mind you, they were kayfabe magazines. They also ran about, you know, 2 to 3 months old with their news. For example, today we're going to be talking about Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazine. We're going to be talking about the January 1983 issue. Well, the information in that would actually be from back at about, you know, September of or October of 1982. And everywhere you went, be it a department store, a grocery store, a drug store, anywhere where magazines and periodicals were sold, you would have on any given month 5 to 10 different pro wrestling magazines. And these were largely dominated by a group of the Stanley Weston magazines that Dave gave the name the Apter Mags to, okay, because Bill Apter was kind of the face of these magazines. He was the, I guess, chief photographer there. He wrote a lot of the articles and stuff. And Bill Apter was a very charming guy. He's a very prolific photographer. So, you know, he was became the face of these magazines. And these would be like Pro Wrestling Illustrated, The Wrestler, Inside Wrestling. You know, then there'd be like quarterly specials like Wrestling 83, Wrestling 84, you know, Wrestling USA and stuff like that. They would periodically put out these different specials and stuff. They were just prolific. I mean, they were constantly churning out magazines. Well, there were other non-Western magazines as well. So any month at your newsstand, you might have one or two of these out there. And oftentimes they utilized George Napolitano, who was another really good pro wrestling photographer, for theirs. And then there were even others. I mean, Paul Heyman famously got his start by producing a wrestling magazine. There will be others as well. And as we go through this series, we'll look at a lot of these different ones. I picked January 1983 Pro Wrestling Illustrated because on another one of our shows we're doing right now called the Long Form History of Wrestling, I'm up to 1983, so I thought it, you know, this might be topical to some of the stuff we've been talking about. But as I review other magazines, we're going to jump all over the place to a lot of different ones and stuff. But Pro Wrestling Illustrated was whether I don't, I can't back any of this up with sales figures or whatever, but it was the, like, probably the number one pro wrestling magazine out there. After it started in 1979, it still is going today, I understand, still published to this very day, although I haven't saw an issue of it in forever. You never see wrestling magazines on the newsstand anymore. You never see magazine newsstands hardly ever anymore. But I do understand Pro Wrestling Illustrated is still published, but you know, in the early to mid 1980s, and really into the late 1980s, especially, they were prolific and they were popular, and they started doing these various gimmicks that furthered their popularity. Every year, from basically the beginning, they would have their year-end awards issues, and these were gimmicked awards. It looked like you got to vote for these different awards. And so you could send in to who you thought wrestler of the year was, or tag team of the year, or so on and so forth. And then they started adding things like the Pro Wrestling Illustrated Top 500, which was a gimmick to basically get 500 people in this name in their magazine, and you know, rank them in order and stuff. And this was all, you know, it was all fun. Don't take any of this stuff too seriously. It again tried to cover pro wrestling like something like Sports Illustrated would, except without breaking kayfabe. So Pro Wrestling Illustrated had a, you know, all most of these magazines had really nice glossy full cover you know, full color covers on them, but the inside was newsprint. Then you would have others that were fancier. They were on higher quality paper, had more color inside, and they were more expensive. But man, used to you know, every wrestling fan I knew picked up one or two of these a month, or at least, you know, stood there in the supermarket and read these things constantly. I can remember all my friends who were wrestling fans. And look, back in the early to mid-1980s, that was pretty much everybody at school, you know, had some pro wrestling magazine. Pro wrestling magazines and comic books just dominated my childhood. And so at one point in time, and I don't know whatever happened to them, I had a collection of hundreds of these things, and it still may be, you know, maybe in the attic of my mom and dad's house or something. I don't know. I'd love to find these again, but you still, you know, people still buy these routinely off eBay and whatever. I've got a few of them. Honestly, you know, they don't hold up very well nowadays when compared to the information superhighway, the internet, and the newsletters and stuff. They're far deeper, but these are fun. They're a lot of fun. So we're going to take a look this episode at Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazine from January 1983. And again, this would have been on the newsstands around, this actually would have been on the newsstands in October or September, October of 1982. So the news was actually older than that still. So this would actually be reporting news about the summer of 1982. It's just that far. And periodicals did this all the time. Comic books did this. I don't know why this was the way of doing things in magazines, but it just was. So, but this is what we have to go by. And you got Pro Wrestling Illustrated. They kept basically the same logo from day one all the way through. I imagine it's still the same logo today. It says TV Sports, and this was just some sort of branding they used. It was the After Mags. I mean, or the Weston Mags, more properly, I guess. This magazine tells us that it's got a giant full color pinup of Ken Patera. So it's going to have inserted in the middle a big color poster of Ken Patera. It's going to have some biographical information on him. Ricky Steamboat dominates the cover of this issue. And you got Ricky Steamboat standing there. You know, he's got flowers around his neck. He's, you know, doing a bicep pose. And this is the issue where you get to vote for 1982's best wrestlers. So this would have your ballot where, you know, in a few months, you would, you know, at the later part of December, Pro Wrestling Illustrated come out with their Wrestler of the Year, Tag Team of the Year, and all that stuff. The story in this issue says Rick Steamboat's comeback plan. He says, quote, "I'm a year away from winning the NWA title. Well, he's actually a little further than that away. He's actually, what, 7 years away or so from winning the NWA World Heavyweight title. But he was certainly a major contender at this point. And again, the Abner magazines really, you know, all these magazines really wrote their own stories and ran their own angles and stuff. There is also an inset picture of Bruiser Brody body slamming Dory Funk Jr. With the caption underneath saying, "Florida on the eve of destruction. Who will stand up to Bruiser Brody?" And so if you're like me and you're living in North Alabama and your promotions you get to see on TV every week are Memphis and at this point in time in 83, it would have been Southeastern Championship Wrestling. And at this point in time, nothing else. WWF wasn't syndicated yet. If you had cable TV, lived in like the towns or something, you could have also got, you know, the Georgia Championship Wrestling show off of WTBS. So here for me, a wrestling fan, I didn't get to see any of these people. I never got to see Ricky Steamboat, never got to see Bruiser Brody or Dory Funk Jr. I'd heard about these people, but never got to see them. They weren't weekly wrestlers on my TV show. So I'm already intrigued. Who are these people? This Bruiser Brody character, very photogenic. He looks very impressive. Let's go inside and see what we can, with our 1982 mind. And I was definitely a fan of wrestling in 1982 down in Southeastern Wrestling, which was rarely covered by these magazines. You know, I was watching people like Ron Fuller and Bob Armstrong, the Sheep Herders at the time, who were Jonathan Boyd and Luke Williams, the Mongolian Stomper. I mean, that was the people I was watching regularly. Your first section of the magazine is Ringside with Bill Apter. And this is where he goes through the news. Now, the news was very nebulous back in this point in time. These magazines wouldn't tell you like you would expect, hey, on, you know, August 31st, Dick Bockwinkel did this. No, there's a seldom ever dates in here. Because, again, you got to remember, the news is old by this point in time. So news traveled very slow back in the day. There was no internet, very little cable TV. So they tell you things that are happening in wrestling, but they're very coy about when it was, you know, whatever. And so notice that as we go through it. So the first thing we see is a picture of a forlorn Nick Bockwinkel kind of looking downcast. And the caption says, "Nick Bockwinkel is not without excuses after losing the AWA Heavyweight Championship to Otto Vons in August." So we know in August, at least, of 1982, Nick Bockwinkel has lost the title to somebody named Otto Vons. Again, from my neck of the woods, I had no idea who these people were, but this sounds interesting. "Does Nick Bockwinkel have any excuses for losing the AWA title to Otto Vons? Need you ask? First of all," this is in quotations, "first of all, these are not excuses," Nick is quick to point out, "just facts. First, the 3 count administered to me when Vons was in the pinning position was the fastest in history. Ordinarily, no one ever even gets a 1 count on me. My shoulders are never down. But this count, which I believe to be a 1, turned out to be a 3. I was stunned. When I got to my feet, I said to the referee, 'You did not give me a 3 count. He said he did, and it was all over. Secondly, I was very upset that my manager, Bobby Heenan, could not be at ringside until midway through the match. He was savaged by Ray Stevens, beaten bloody. I was worried about him, so my concentration was not at its best." All right, so now we switch paragraphs, and we just go straight to another news story. This also has a photo with it. There's a masked man who has Paul Orndorff in a chin lock. I did know who Paul Orndorff was. He had been wrestling in my area. Did not know who the Super Destroyer fellow was. And it says, "Super Destroyer defeated Paul Orndorff in a tournament to decide who would fill the vacant Georgia national title. The Super Destroyer," who, by the way, was Scott Irwin, "defeated Paul Orndorff in the final round of a one-night tournament to decide a new Georgia national champion. Ringside observers said they saw Buzz Sawyer hand Super Destroyer a weapon, which the masked man put into his mask. Hardly by coincidence, Super Destroyer won the match with a headbutt." Now, new paragraph, new story. That's just the way this goes. Who is the mystery man paying off Florida wrestlers for breaking Barry Windham's bones? Shortly after Jake Roberts was awarded $1,100 for breaking Barry's nose, a letter arrived in our offices with the words, Barry Windham's bone condition. Down and 206 to go, or one down, 206 to go. Derek Draper left Florida after losing a lose-or-leave town match to Brian Blair. Joe LeDuc failed to come to terms with Florida promoters and has joined the House of Humperdinck in the Carolinas. Larry Hennig has returned to the AWA Matt Wars, while his son Kurt, who had been wrestling and refereeing in the AWA, is now grappling part-time in the WWF. So you can see this is, you know, this is, tells you where your favorite wrestler may have gone. His eyes burning with rage, Abdullah the Butcher told the Japanese press corps, he speaks Japanese fluently, we're told, I want to taste Inoki's blood. I crave it. I have dreams of biting his forehead open and seeing him drained of blood. Harley Race now holds two titles. The WWA King recently, and then here's a great thing about the magazine. This is page 6. It tells us this is continued on page 652. So, let's go find page 52 so we can finish our news report here. Page 52. I loved the magazines. We had to flip to the back. The newspapers did the same thing. It was all broke up. Get right in the middle of a train of thought and lose it. Let's see here. 54. Well, this is proving to be harder to do than anyone expected. All right, there's 54. Scroll on back. 54, 50, all right, 52. I guess we're missing page 53. What about that? So the continuation of the news here. There's a picture now of Harley Race pile driving somebody. And the caption says, this devastating pile driver enabled Harley Race to defeat Jumbo Tsuruta and win the United National title. Race already holds the WWA title. The sentence continues. He took the United National title from Jumbo Tsuruta in Japan. Bodybuilder turned wrestler Phil Breer is a confident young man. Even before his first professional match, he offered $5,000 to any AWA wrestler who could pin him. I don't know who this Phil Breer is. We'll have to do some research on him. Who is Phil Breer? That's interesting. A name right there out of the heyday of when I was a fan that I don't know. That's highly unusual. Let's see. Sergeant Slaughter has been suspended by the NWA for an indefinite period. The organization issued the suspension after viewing films of the match in which Slaughter risked his U.S. title against Wahoo McDaniel's hair. After Slaughter lost the title, he called in his friends, Privates Nelson and Kernoodle, Greg Valentine, and Sir Oliver Humperdinck to cut Wahoo's hair anyway. Wahoo escaped before the gang could complete the job. Good man, Roddy Piper, as Magnificent Morocco was roughing up Gordon Solie on World Championship Wrestling from Georgia. Roddy Piper came to the aid of his fellow broadcaster. All right, so that was a very well-known angle. A bitter feud has developed between Morocco and Piper, with the fans backing Roddy. We thought we'd never see the day. Al Costello, manager of the Fabulous Kangaroos, feels he has made a real find in the giant Kareem Muhammad. He is a maniac, just totally off the wall nuts, says Costello. I believe I can make this man world champion. Finally, Dory Funk Jr. asked us to put this in print. Quote, I am no longer responsible for the actions of my brother Terry regarding his feud with Dusty Rhodes. Although I do not like Dusty Rhodes, he did make some gestures to befriend Terry so they could go after mutual enemies. Because of Terry's refusal and intent to maintain ill feelings toward Dusty, I want no part of this feud. Dusty showed he is a man trying to patch things up. Terry is acting like a spoiled brat. I take no sides. That's all for now. see you at ringside. So, you know, that gives you an idea of the type of, quote, news you got in these magazines. And so, again, some of it was really helpful as far as to figure out where different people were going, different places different people were showing up at. Not really, you know, hardcore news like you would expect from something like the Observer, Torch, or something like that. The next column in this is called King's Court, and it's by Peter King. Again, some of these people are fictional. Some of these are real. Bill Apter is a real person. Peter King, I believe, also is a real person. There were others in here, not real people.
We depend on Patreon support for our website and podcast network. In order to continue these podcasts you enjoy, we need you to visit whenitwascool.com and pledge at least $1. You'll gain access to lots of exclusive podcasts, newsletters, and more. Sign up is quick, simple, and can be canceled at any time. whenitwascool.com and click any Patreon link. Thank you.
So the real person, Peter King, writes a, his is like an editorial article, King's Court. And his is about the Freebirds in this issue. And I won't read the whole thing, go through the whole deal, because, again, it's not really any news. It's just story about the Freebirds. And much of this column was written a few weeks ago, but I wanted to wait until the Freebirds lost their Georgia National Tag Team title before I published it. The Freebirds finally lost their title to the Samoans. Now is the time for a few observations on the Freebirds and the fans. First, a little history. Michael Hayes formed the Freebirds with Terry Gordy about 4 years ago. As a team, they were voted most hated by Gulf Coast area fans. Freebirds' tactics were brutally spiced with a bit of sadism. Winning matches was secondary to them. As Michael Hayes said at the time, "I'd rather lose by disqualification and see our opponents carried from the ring than win a match and see them walk away." The Freebirds won many regional titles in Louisiana and Alabama before moving to Georgia. In Georgia, Hayes and Gordy were joined by Buddy Roberts, another feared rule breaker. Any combination of the three men would form a tag team on any given night. Unpredictability had been added to brutality and sadism. It wasn't long before the Freebirds had captured the Georgia National title for the first time. They defended their belts with ruthless precision in the ring. Dressing room attacks on unsuspecting future opponents were common. No tag team since the Graham Brothers of the early 1960s had generated so much hatred from the fans. But then about a year ago, a shocking change overcame Michael Hayes. He said he was embarrassed by his style. He promised to reform, and the fans forgave him. Buddy Roberts, disgusted by Hayes' new attitude, left the group. Terry Gordy now focused on his rule-breaking wrath and turned it toward his partner, Michael Hayes. The two engaged in a series of bloody wars throughout the South. Then one night in Alabama, Terry Gordy came to Michael Hayes' aid. Gordy afterwards said he too was embarrassed by his style. He said he wanted to team again with Hayes, and they promised to reform, and fans forgave them. Slowly at first, but soon building to a crescendo, the fans started to cheer for the Freebirds. Michael Hayes and Terry Gordy wrestled other teams the fans disliked, and in a matter of a few weeks, the Freebirds had become Georgia's most popular tag team. They zoomed to the Georgia National Tag Team titles again, and their second championship reign was marked by fan adulation. And so the article goes on, but you basically, what, you know, to pay attention to there is how the magazines had to skirt around babyface and heel. Okay, so the After Mags in particular used the term rule breaker and fan favorite. And, you know, that was as good as any. We, the fans, used good guy and bad guy. I mean, it just simplified it there. But in a real world where real sports actually occur, you know, it's you have heels and you have baby faces, but the fans decide who that is based on usually, a variety of different things. But here in wrestling, these are roles given out by promoters and bookers. So they have to act a certain way, come out of a certain dressing room. And what really defines the style? There were many baby faces that broke the rules. There were many, you know, heels who were quite scientific. It all just depended on who you were wrestling. And so the magazines had to kind of skirt around this issue. And otherwise this editorial is pretty much right. Hayes and Gordy the year before had a feud in Alabama that ended up very hot note, with the two, you know, mending the fence and becoming partners again and then leaving the area. Terry Gordy had been a very successful singles wrestler in Southeastern Wrestling. Michael Hayes periodically popped in and out, but I mean, really, Terry Gordy was the single star in Southeastern, more so than Michael Hayes. But that, again, kind of interesting how they did that. Next up is On Assignment by Liz Hunter, and I think Liz Hunter was a fictional character, a fictional writer for the magazine, and it's a story about her, I guess, interviewing Buddy Rose, looking to interview Playboy Buddy Rose. There's a picture of Buddy Rose here, and the caption says, "Playboy Buddy Rose likes to live life in the fast lane. But when you live by the motto, pleasure before business, your professional image is bound to suffer. As far as Liz Hunter is concerned, though, Rose's image stinks anyway." And this is one of these, you know, kayfabe made-up deals where she's going to have an interaction, negative interaction with Buddy Rose. You know, of course, she's a supposed female writer, and she's going to be, you know, Buddy Rose is going to treat her rudely. And so you have an article about that. Again, really nothing to do with any storylines that's actually happening in wrestling. And that was a lot of times the fact. That was really the weakness of these magazines, in my opinion, was that, you know, they did these in business for themselves kind of articles and stuff that really had no bearing on what was happening. You as a wrestling fan getting these magazines, you got them for the pictures so you could see what these wrestlers look like, for what little news you could glean out of them, and really for dream match fantasy booking kind of stuff, the ratings and you know, the centerfold posters were pretty cool and stuff like that. In Focus with Craig Peters, and Craig Peters was a real person. This is another sort of news segment in Pro Wrestling Illustrated. It says, "Blackjack Mulligan, Super Heavyweight Champion." And there's a picture of Blackjack Mulligan wrestling Andre the Giant. It says, "With all the furor surrounding Blackjack Mulligan's feud with Andre the Giant, everyone seems to have forgotten that Mulligan holds the Super Heavyweight Championship of the world. Well, Mulligan will be headed to South Africa to defend his title against the man he beat for the championship, 6'7", 280-pound John Wilkins, in a 2 out of 3 falls match. I'm going to be doing my best to represent the United States in the match," Mulligan said, "and I intend to be returning to the United States victorious. Though not often defended in the United States, the super heavyweight title is widely recognized throughout Europe and the rest of the world." So you get cool little tidbits like that. And, you know, whether based in reality or fantasy, they were pretty cool. You know, it's one of those things that you're like, yeah, did you know Blackjack Mulligan was the world super heavyweight champion? And your you know, school friends will be like, ooh, no, there's no way, that belt's not real, that's not true. It's in Pro Wrestling Illustrated. And sure enough, there it will be, you know. Time to pay the Piper. Who would have thought? Roddy Piper and Magnificent Morocco at each other's throats. I certainly wouldn't have believed it, particularly with the way Piper continually praised Morocco's wrestling skills each week on the televised matches from Georgia. And I never would have thought that Piper would turn against a man he paid to do dirty work for him. Nevertheless, Piper feels that his association with co-announcer Gordon Solie is more valuable than his friendship with Morocco. So when Morocco roughed up Gordon Solie on national television, it was Piper who came to the aid of his fellow broadcaster. I have no doubt that before long, Piper and Morocco will be coming to blows in the ring as well. So this was, again, coming off the hot angle Rumble, where Gordon Solie gets accosted by Don Morocco, and Roddy Piper turns babyface to save him. Dressing Room Confidential by Stu Sachs. And Stu Sachs was a real person as well. And this is another, you know, this is another personality profile type piece. This one is on Captain Lou Albano. The photo of Lou, Captain Lou there says, by the expression on his face, it is apparent that the less stable side of Lou Albano's personality prevails. And this is just kind of giving people that didn't really know Lou Albano a little story about, you know, how he's crazy and he's unbalanced and all this good stuff. The next article or section is called Off the Top Rope by Dan Shockett. And Dan Shockett was a fictional heel writer for the... Actually, Dan Shockett was the real one. Okay, there were two heel writers for the magazine. Dan Shockett, I think, was the real guy who ended up dying of, I think, cancer. And then he was replaced, I think, by a fictional heel writer. We'll get into that in future episodes, I'm sure. And so he does this, you know, it's really like he answers fan mail, and I'm sure all this, quote, fan mail was fabricated. Some of it may have been real, but it was basically just a way to let somebody, you know, cheer for the heels here in this magazine. There's a photo of Rick Martel. He has somebody in a headlock, looks like, I can't really tell who it is. Maybe it says in the caption, it says, "It is the responsibility of wrestling fans to look beyond Rick Martel's appearance and judge him purely as a wrestler. Unfortunately, there are not many responsible wrestling fans." So, you know, again, that's, you got to have a heel in the magazine to rile the fans up here. And it's basically your simplistic stuff, like, Terry here didn't even spell all of his words correctly, so why do I care what, you know, Terry thinks about my articles and stuff like that. There's a photo of Roddy Piper here. The caption says, "Roddy Piper was deprived of his livelihood by the vote of typically irresponsible wrestling fans. To do that to a writer would be a violation of the constitutional rights guaranteed to him by the First Amendment." Then there's a photo here of Tony Atlas, who was a kind of a favorite of the Aftermags. Very photogenic was Tony Atlas back in the early 1980s, to be sure. And this caption says, "Just to straighten out a common misconception, I do not deny the success of men like Tony Atlas. I merely point out that the way they achieve their success is highly unethical." All right. Press conference, Bob Backlund. And this is their interview. These interviews were almost always fake and fabricated. Sometimes it even went awry of the wrestlers. The wrestlers would read these interviews that they supposedly gave. Something would be out of character. They would complain to Bill Apter. Sometimes there may have been quotes in here, like built around a quote that was actually real or something. But for the most part, these were fabricated interviews. And this one is a press conference with Bob Backlund. Every issue, three reporters from Pro Wrestling Illustrated will participate in an incisive press conference with the top wrestling star. The questions will be demanding, and the answers will reveal the innermost thoughts of the giants of the sport. And again, it's really just a chance to kind of do a personality profile type piece on these. Here's one of the quotes they've taken to feature here that Bob Backlund supposedly said. Said, "I'm not even concerning myself with trying to get an edge over any abilities that superstar Graham may have. I just have to work to make myself the strongest possible wrestler I can." And then there's multiple photos of Bob Backlund in there, including one of him wrestling superstar Billy Graham, as you might imagine. The next feature article in here is Tommy Rich Silences the Ghost of His Past. And there's a picture of Tommy Rich body slamming what looks to be Tojo Yamamoto. Says to Tommy Rich, "Memphis is a city of shame. It is where he was a rule breaker, despised by the fans. Fate forced him to return. Would he survive the city that turned loose his demons?" Well, you know, Tommy Rich was oftentimes both a babyface and a heel in Memphis, playing various roles with very famous feuds. And again, this is just a story to kind of give some context to Tommy Rich's time in Memphis. There's a photo here of Tommy Rich has somebody up for a body slam. And see, it says, Tommy Rich can never be accused of playing favorites. After slamming Coco Ware to the canvas, Wildfire pulls Bobby Eaton into the ring and performs the same to him. And, yeah, I guess it's Bobby Eaton. He's putting a body slam on. And, again, I've told you many times, I loved that tag team of Bobby Eaton and Coco Ware. You know, Bobby Eaton, of course, as well he should be, so much associated with the Midnight Express, Dennis Condrey, and later Stan Lane. And even, you know, some people would not think Steve Regal and Bobby Eaton were a great tag team, and they were. But, my gosh, you know, one of the best combinations he was with was definitely with Coco Ware there in Memphis. Very, very good team that doesn't nearly get the historical accolades it should. Another caption here, looks, I see Jackie Fargo. It looks like Coco Ware in this photo as well. The caption says, Coco Ware tries to sneak attack Tommy Rich while Tommy engages in a battle of finger locks with Eaton. But Jackie Fargo spoils the effort by coming through the other side. Rich and Fargo meshed beautifully as a team, and fans voiced their appreciation. Yeah, Tommy Rich and Eddie Gilbert for a while was associated with Jackie Fargo. In fact, they were the ill-fated New Fargos, New Fabulous Fabulous Ones there, and New Fabulous Ones, I should say. Yeah, it didn't work out very well. The next section here is, what are they saying? And this is just again a personality profile type thing where they just use a picture of a wrestler and then give some real or imagined quote from that wrestler. Here in this issue we have Superstar Graham. Let's see if this even sounds like something Superstar Graham would say. It says, the time has come for Bob Backlund. He cheated me out of the WWF title 4.5 years ago, and I'm going to make him pay for it. The champion may now be a challenger. I may be the one who is called the underdog, but let me tell you, it won't be long before the current champion is a contender once more. Okay, well, that sounds sort of like something Superstar Graham might say. Dick Slater. That's the first time we've seen Dick Slater in this magazine. Let's see what Dick Slater may or may not have said in real life here. So Don Carson cost me the AWA title when he interfered in my match with Nick Bockwinkel. It could be me wearing the title belt now instead of Otto Vons. Well, forget about Vons. Forget about Bockwinkel. It's Carson I want. It's dues paying time now, and Carson has a lot of outstanding debts to pay off. Yeah, Dick Slater probably never said that. Oh, here's Dusty Rhodes, again a favorite of the magazines. He cooperated a lot with the Weston magazines. So Dusty Rhodes supposedly says, so Kendo Nagasaki doesn't appreciate the fact that I'm out to get him, huh? He thinks I'm making fun of his martial arts discipline, does he? Well, I'm not making fun of him. I'm just pointing out what an insignificant little puppy Nagasaki is. I'm going to prove it to him in the ring, too. Yeah, that is definitely not anything, not worded in any sort of way Dusty Rhodes would have worded that. They could have tried a little harder on that one. Michael Hayes, looking all greasy and creepy here, says, we've got our problems down here. We've got Stan Hansen and Ole Anderson out to eliminate us from the face of wrestling, and we've got the Samoans who cheated their way into the Georgia National Tag Team belts. But Terry Gordy and myself will never give up. We can assure our fans of one thing. Freebird Fantasia will emerge victorious. Yep, he never said that either. Next feature order article is Florida on the Eve of Destruction. Who will stand up to Bruiser Brody? And there is a photo of Bruiser Brody. Looks like it's Brian Blair he's beaten up on. It says, gripping Florida in a reign of terror. Bruiser Brody dominates the sport. Is there a man ready to challenge him? More importantly, is there a man who can survive that challenge? And then we get a couple pages on a personality feature on Bruiser Brody and what he's doing down in Florida. And this will be this will be kind of fun for fans like myself who never got to see Brody. And actually, it was years before I got to see Bruiser Brody for the first time. And that was out when World Class finally started syndicating their shows. And to be honest with you, I was underwhelmed. I mean, the After magazines made Bruiser Brody out to be a way bigger deal than I thought he was. I mean, watching Bruiser Brody wrestle these and selling a lot out there in Texas, and I just thought, you know, he was built up far more fearsome in the magazines than I thought. So I was a little underwhelmed with Brody. Then we get an interview with Ricky Steamboat, and that was our cover story. Rick Steamboat's comeback plan: I'm a year away from winning the NWA title. It has been many months since Rick Steamboat has seen daily action in the ring. Rumors spread regarding a possible decision to leave wrestling. Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Stu Sachs recently had the opportunity to speak with Steamboat, who has most assuredly decided to continue wrestling all the way to the top. And yeah, I mean, definitely Ricky Steamboat's biggest years were ahead of him at this point. The WWF run where he becomes Intercontinental Champion, then in 89 where he wins the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. So, you know, 7 years away from winning the NWA Championship instead of, you know, a year away. But, you know, pretty cool story. And, again, for somebody I didn't get to see. Then we get this big article, and this was, you know, for me, I did not get AWA wrestling at all. It might as well have been, you know, it was really the most foreign national promotion to me. That you never got AWA shows down here. I had no access to the TV. This was years before videotape trading. The only way I knew anything that was happening in the AWA was through the magazines. And here you got a guy I've never heard of, Otto Vons. It says, shocker in St. Paul. Nick Bockwinkel loses the AWA title to Otto Vons. And there's a photo of this, you know, big kind of powerlifting type guy. He's got Nick Bockwinkel in a painful hold there, and it says, so many men have tried over the long months, and very few have even walked away from the experience able to say they've come close. On August 29th, 1982, however, one man succeeded. Otto Vons defeated Nick Bockwinkel for the AWA heavyweight title, and even Bobby Heenan couldn't do a thing about it. And I covered this back in the Long Form History of Pro Wrestling show, where we talked about this. I think I even went through this article, perhaps here. To 14,000 spectators at the St. Paul Civic Center in Minnesota, it seemed to be just another routine title defense. Nick Bockwinkel was placing his championship on the line against Otto Vons, a man who is virtually a mystery to any wrestling fan who hasn't followed the recent history of the AWA very closely, and a relative newcomer with an unknown background even to those fans who have. Bockwinkel and Vons traded maneuvers early in their match, feeling each other out to determine the extent of each other's skills. Arm locks, headlocks, and traditional tests of strength were used to gauge each other. Roughly 8 or 9 minutes into the match, Bockwinkel's manager Bobby Heenan appeared at ringside. Few fans believed that Heenan would be able to interfere in this match. He was bandaged and stitched after clashing with Ray Stevens in the ring earlier that evening. Nevertheless, Heenan was there, and he was ready, if not necessarily able, to be of use to the wrestler should the need arise. Several minutes later, Bockwinkel maneuvered himself into a position where he was able to attempt a pile driver on Vons. But before he could complete the maneuver, Vons brilliantly backdropped Bockwinkel and covered him for the pin. The referee counted 1, 2, and 14,000 fans were certain that Bockwinkel would count out or would kick out at the count of 2. A second later, 14,000 fans sat stunned in their seats as the referee's 3 count and that second title reign of Nick Bockwinkel was history. As astonishment turned to recognition, 14,000 fans made the transition from the buzzing sound of uncertainty to the cheers of praise for the 14th champion in the association's 25-year history. And then it goes on there. And again, this was kind of a sort of a straightforward sort of news story, and it would have been news to me as a kid back then reading this magazine. The After magazines made sure to always play the NWA, AWA, and WWF as basically equal federations. There were 3 world championships in the United States, and a lot of their articles and stuff, they revolved around these dream matches. Well, what if these different world champions faced each other? What if there was just one world champion? Who would it be? And if you followed wrestling as many thousands of people did through these magazines, well, you had to wonder, because, you know, Nick Bockwinkel was portrayed as just as important as Bob Backlund or just as important as Harley Race or Ric Flair. And so that made these magazines kind of fun. Wrestling Inquirer was the most up-to-date news section in Pro Wrestling Illustrated. So it was one that seems like it was inserted right at the very deadline. So you got your more up-to-date news there. This says, Heenan cries foul, files protest. And again, this would be over the AWA world title change. It says, Albano, Snuka relationship crumbling. And this covers, you know, the... a WWW, which this has been very sparse on WWF news here in this issue, I have to say. And the After Mags, the West of Mags, had a very precarious relationship with the WWF. They were, you know, they were oftentimes banned from shooting ringside. They would have to go up in the stands and shoot photos. They were not working with them as closely as other, where Dusty Rhodes would embrace them wherever he was booking, and so would, like, you know, Fritz Von Erich out in Texas and stuff. So definitely would Jerry Lawler and Jerry Jarrett there in Memphis. They didn't get much cooperation from the WWF, despite it being, you know, this the biggest promotion really in the U.S. So sometimes this was reflected in their news coverage. Samoans capture the Georgia National Tag Team belt, so we get a news story about that. Paul Jones captures Mid-Atlantic title. And then there's some reports from other places. There's one from Tokyo, Japan that says, Superfly Jimmy Snuka has issued a challenge to Pacific Wrestling Federation champion Giant Baba. The Superfly stresses that after the tour of Japan, he will return to the WWF and pursue the Intercontinental title held by Pedro Morales. And then one from San Juan, Puerto Rico says, World Wrestling Council champion Carlos Colon is trying to get top-rated challenger Abdullah the Butcher banned from competition. Any man who conducts himself as an animal in the ring, like Abdullah, should not be allowed the honor of wrestling for a title, says Colon. So it's, you know, stuff like that. Matt Brock, looking at Matt Brock, was a fictional creation. He was probably Bill Apter, I believe. Matt Brock was like this old school gruff veteran journalist with a, you know, he wasn't a heel, but he was, you know, had this downcast look at life. He was, you know, this veteran journalist who'd seen some stuff, and so he's going to have a little editorial in each issue. I honestly could never care less about Matt Brock and his articles. They were always just really to get the character of Matt Brock over more than any real information therein. This one has something to do with Kevin Sullivan. Kevin Sullivan looks out to his cheering fans as he applies a chin lock on Jerry Lawler. Kevin has not always heard those cheers, and so this was basically a story about Kevin Sullivan being a babyface, and runs for a couple pages. Then we get to the back half of the magazine, which is the continuation of articles. It's where you read the last part of the articles that have been written. Here's the one about Tommy Rich and the one about Otto Vons winning the AWA championship. Let's see here, the rest of King's Court. Okay, here's another section of What Are They Saying, where we get some fake quotes from some wrestlers again. Here we get one from Playboy Buddy Rose, one from David Von Erich. Let's see what David Von Erich may or may not have said. People come up to me in the arenas after the matches, even in the streets, and ask me about what it's like now that I'm not wrestling under the guidance of the Funks. Well, let me tell everyone that I'm happy to be rid of Squiggy Funk Jr. Squiggy Funk Jr. What about that? And I never have to see his ugly face again unless it's on the other end of one of my fists. Now, well, I don't know. Maybe David Von Erich might have said that. Mr. Wrestling 2, Ted DiBiase. Let's see what Ted DiBiase supposedly said. The magazines like Ted DiBiase a lot, too. I think they really saw him as a potential future world champion, so they gave him a lot of coverage. Says, everybody is so worried about me. What's wrong with you, Ted? They ask. What happened to you, Ted? They want to know, how come you're different now? Man, why don't those people just leave me alone? Haven't they got enough to worry about in their own lives instead of constantly hounding me about mine? You know, sounds like Ted's recently turned heel somewhere, probably in Georgia. Here's an interesting little news bit here, part of the In Focus deal, where we get Tiger Mask. Yes, Tiger Mask gets a short little section here. It says August 30th, Madison Square Garden saw Tiger Mask, holder of both the NWA and WWF Junior Heavyweight titles, make his New York City debut by successfully defending the WWF portion of his championship against the Dynamite Kid. Tiger Mask was sensational, expertly blending martial arts and gymnastics with more conventional wrestling skills. Tiger Mask is a formidable opponent for any wrestler. Highlights of his match, Tiger Mask hurls the Dynamite Kid into the corner, approaches him in the air with a flying drop kick, and executes a perfect reverse somersault upon contact with his opponent. All I can say is I can't wait to see this exciting star in action again. He is truly one man to keep a sharp eye on. Then they have, of course, in any opportunity an actor mag had to get Mil Máscaras in there, they do so. And so here's a little blurb on Mil Máscaras. Spending a lot of time in the Texas area these days, Mil Máscaras finds himself defending not only the honor of masked wrestling in general, but of Mexican wrestlers in particular. I'm getting very tired of ignorant men like Gino Hernandez, said Máscaras recently. They say that native Mexican wrestlers don't have skill, they don't have ability, and that they're not fit to walk in the same ring as them. Well, I have news for these people, and especially for Gino Hernandez. We have not only the skill and the ability, but we have the ways and means to prove it to them. No doubt Máscaras will be letting his own considerable skills do the talking for him when he clashes with Hernandez in the squared circle. Now, any chance to get Mil in these magazines, they do so. I don't remember seeing a ratings in this issue, so I don't think... Nope, there's not any rankings. That was always one of my favorite, was the rankings, and as we go through these periodically, and we're going to do more than just Pro Wrestling Illustrated, more than just the Apter magazines. We're going to do quite a variety of these newsstand magazines in the future when we roll around to them. I think, if memory serves me correct, our next show in the cycle will be from the pages of the Wrestling Observer newsletter. And if memory serves me correct, it's going to be Gorilla Monsoon, who, you know, was a very successful, very popular wrestler, but also, you know, a power player in the WWF, a part owner of World Wrestling Council down in Puerto Rico. So it's going to be very interesting to see what Dave Meltzer had to say in the pages of the Wrestling Observer newsletter about Gorilla Monsoon. So that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Thank you very much for listening. Again, I apologize for my voice. I'm just vocally exhausted right now, and so I apologize. But that means we've got lots and lots and lots of audio content over at whenitwascool.com, and I certainly hope you'll check it out. Listen, we got on a real good roll earlier this year. We set new records for number of Patreons, and we've kind of hit a little bit of a summer slump here, summertime blues, I guess, has come there. So we'd love to have you. If you've been there in the past, we'd love to have you back. I assure you, we have built up quite a bit of audio. Like I said, we're approaching 2,000 podcasts in our archives. And remember, our stuff's evergreen. We review retro pop culture and pro wrestling history. So this, we're talking about stuff that's not going to go out of date. You can listen to our biographies, our long-form history of wrestling, our various TV and match reviews, not to mention our other pop culture stuff. So we got a lot going on. We got an entire podcasting network. If you're looking for something new, maybe you've never been there before, never, you know, really considered what we have to offer, I hope you will, because we have a whole podcasting network. It's not just my shows, but we have retro pop culture shows. We have shows about things of the same nature as Dragon King Dark. We have other retro wrestling shows. We have music-related shows. Come check us out. And I would love it if you would bookmark whenitwascool.com and make us a regular stop on your website travels. And certainly subscribe to our show. So thank you very much. Look forward to seeing you over there at whenitwascool.com. And I'm Carl, and we'll see you here again soon with another show.
When It Was Cool is your home for retro pop culture fun. We feature hundreds of podcasts on classic TV shows, movies, retro sports, toys, history, music, wrestling, and more. Tons of free podcasts. And hit any Patreon button for a deeper dive into our premium shows. WhenItWasCool.com, fun and friendly.